embassy in Iraq comes under a rocket attack hours after drones and missiles targeted two bases hosting American troops in western and northern Iraq. A fire breaks out on a container ship anchored at Dubai's Jebel Ali port following an explosion that was heard across the city. Also in the headlines, the death toll from a building collapse in Florida rises to 54 as rescue workers keep searching for 86 people who are still missing. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the U.S. embassy inside Baghdad's Green Zone has been targeted with several rockets. That is the third attack against American installations in Iraq in the past 24 hours. Iraqi security forces said the embassy's anti-rocket system diverted one of the projectiles, while one fell near the zone's perimeter. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack yet. The strike came hours after rockets hit the Ain al-Asad Air Base, a military installation in western Iraq that houses U.S. troops. Early Wednesday, security forces said armed drones hit a U.S. base at Erbil Airport in the northern Kurdistan region.
Iraq's Ain al-Assad Air Base hosting American forces has come under a fresh rocket attack. A spokesman for the U.S.-led coalition in Iraq said two personnel were injured after more than a dozen missiles targeted the facility. Less than a day earlier, a U.S. base at Erbil Airport in northern Kurdistan region was targeted as well. Security sources in Erbil said armed drones were used in the attack, which prompted the suspension of flights at the airport. These incidents are nothing new. Supply convoys for the U.S.-led military coalition in Iraq have come under repeated attacks over the past months. Anti-American sentiments have been on the rise since Washington's assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes in January last year. Shortly after the killing of the two iconic anti-terror figures, the Iraqi parliament unanimously voted to end the American military presence. The legislation has fallen on deaf ears as the United States seems unwilling to leave the Arab country. On the ground, things look simple. The Iraqis do not want American troops on their soil. The United States, that had invaded Iraq before, sent thousands of new troops there in 2014 under the pretext of fighting Daesh terrorists. Baghdad declared victory over the terror group in 2017, but Washington has shown no sign of intending to leave the oil-rich nation. The U.S. cites the continued threat of Daesh as the reason for its long, drawn-out stay in Iraq, but what it's done over the past years put its stated purpose in question. Washington has regularly launched attacks on the positions of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Units, an umbrella organization which was the key in defeating Daesh. Such strikes have been strongly condemned by Iraqi political and military figures, as well as the public, who regard the U.S. military presence as the main source of tensions in the country.
Robert Fantino is an author and journalist and joins us now out of Kitchener. Robert, welcome. What's your thoughts about these latest? We're seeing almost daily attacks against American interests in Iraq. And you can say ever since the, anti-American sentiment has been running high since January 2020. But ever since the those airstrikes on the Iraq-Syria border that killed four Iraqi security members, we've seen almost daily attacks against Americans. Do you think this is the start of a new equation?
Yeah, this is a continuation of what's been going on. The people of Iraq do not want the American government to be there. They want them out of their country. The idea of fighting terrorism is just a myth. The United States' presence in Iraq has increased terrorism. It's increased hostility to the United States. A spokesman for U.S. in response to this most recent drone attack said that this compromises the rule of law and Iraqi independence and sovereignty. The presence of the United States in Iraq does exactly that. The Iraqi government, as you mentioned earlier, voted for the U.S. to leave. The U.S. has refused to leave that country. It is complete hypocrisy. The U.S. wants to continue the destabilization of Iraq and Syria and wants to destabilize Iran, wants to stabilize the entire Middle East for the benefit of Israel and for its own geopolitical goals.
Well, Robert, Washington claims that its presence in Iraq is not one of a military occupation, not of that nature, but that it needs, that its presence is required in Iraq. But when we see American forces attacking Iraqi security forces, then you get the opposite. One would get the opposite idea as to what the nature of the American presence is in Iraq.
Of course. The United States government spokespeople say one thing. They say it's not a military presence. It's just there for security, which is certainly a military presence. But the fact that they are attacking Iraqi security forces says right there that they are a military presence. The fact that they are remaining in the country after the Iraqi government has to leave indicates their military presence. This is an occupation. This is a country, a government, a powerful government that is keeping its military presence in a less powerful government for its own goals, not for the Iraqi people. This doesn't benefit the Iraqi people. They want the U.S. gone. They want to be able to rebuild after all the damage that the United States has done to their country, and the U.S. continues to refuse to leave.
Yeah. Finally, Robert, the latest attack is on a U.S. embassy inside Baghdad's Green Zone. What do you think about this? What's your views about this American embassy, which some describe as a city within a city? It's got about 5,000 to 10,000 military troops or military contractors protecting it. It's very heavily fortified. Do you need an embassy of that size, or is there, as some Iraqi officials and security officials say, that this embassy is there for other reasons, such as creating instability in Iraq and interfering in the political process of Iraq? We've got elections coming up in a few months.
Yes, to call this an embassy is just U.S. speak. It makes no sense whatsoever. It is a fortress. It is, as you said, heavily armed, heavily populated. An embassy might have a number of buildings even, and offices and people who are working in the diplomatic sphere within a country. This is not what's happening with the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. It is a fortress. It is a military base, basically, within the boundaries of Iraq.
Okay, Robert, thank you very much indeed for that. Robert Fantina, the author and journalist, joining us out of Kitchener. Now, a huge explosion has rocked Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. The blast at the Jebel Ali port set off massive fires. Officials said the explosion hit a container ship that had been anchored at the port. Dubai's civil defense said no injuries or deaths have been reported so far, adding that the fire is under control. Dubai media office said the explosion was, quote, a normal accident that was caused by a container holding flammable material. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has dismissed the United States and European powers' concerns about Tehran's decision to make enriched uranium metal. Saeed Khatibzadeh said the move to produce a silicide fuel plate enriched to 20% purity is solely for peaceful purposes. The spokesperson said the European signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal that are accusing Iran of having violated the agreement have not taken any concrete steps to hold up their end of the bargain. He reiterated Tehran's stance that it will scale back all its remedial missteps once anti-Iran sanctions are removed. Iran and the remaining parties to the deal have held 6 rounds of talks in Vienna since April to restore the accord. Political commentator Kevin Barrett says Israel uses its influence on the US and Europe to undo Iran's nuclear deal.
It is ironic that the other side can shred the agreement with no justification whatsoever, and then try to blame Iran. When in fact, Iran has always been committed to this agreement and is willing to step back into it at any time. The problem, of course, is that the promised sanctions relief never arrived. The Obama administration slow-walked the sanctions relief, trying to use it to put pressure on Iran in other areas outside of the agreement, and then the Trump administration just tore up the agreement. And so now, if they want to restore the agreement, obviously it's the other side, and this essentially just the Americans are the problem here, let's face it. And the Biden administration is full of people with various degrees of loyalty to the state of Israel, which is really what this issue is about. It's not about American national security. It's about the, call it a rivalry between Tehran and Tel Aviv. And so, unfortunately, Tel Aviv has a lot of power in Europe as well as in the United States, and they're using that power to try to undo this deal.
The anti-Iran terror group Mujahideen al-Khalq is set to hold its annual conference again in Paris. Despite the COVID crisis, the French authorities allow the group to gather in the Paris suburb. Why does France authorize them to have a meeting when at the same time desires to strengthen its ties with Iran? Our correspondent in Paris has more on this.
The anti-Iran Mujahideen al-Khalq organization, considered by many as a dangerous terrorist organization, will hold its annual meeting in Paris on Saturday. The notorious Cairn Academic Edition House, a kind of think tank for universities, published a study about the National Council of Resistance of Iran, NCRI, the umbrella organization of the NKO, with as conclusion, according to objective criteria, the NCRI is without any doubt a sectarian organization. The NKO is, among others, accused of separating children from their parents. So why do French authorities allow them to organize their annual conference?
If Mariam Rajavi is still in France and they still have their rallies every now and then in Paris, it means that the French want to be on both sides of the fence, like all the Europeans. France has an interest of having good relations with Iran. They had Total, which had invested a lot of money then, they'd probably want to go back.
In previous meetings of the NKO in Paris, the group had actively lobbied to obtain the support of mayors and members of parliament. The most visible support comes from French Member of Parliament Habib Meir, who has the double nationality, Israeli and French. He participates even in marches from the NKO here in 2016. Is there a link between Israel and the NKO terrorist organization?
Mujahideen have been linked closely to Israel. You have a report by two high officials from the CIA, which was publicized by NBC Radio in 2012, which said that the operations to assassinate the scientists and any other clandestine operations, terrorist operations inside Iran, were being planned or had been planned by the Israeli Secret Service and executed by members of the Mujahideen. So the Mujahideen have been working with the Israeli Secret Services ever since that time.
Also, important USA officials spoke at the conference. John Bolton, a former USA National Security Advisor, Rudolph Giuliani, former mayor of New York, and they received money. USA speakers received $25,000. French speakers received $12,500. Media reports say that the money comes from the CIA, from Mossad, but mainly from Saudi Arabia. Experts say that European Union countries, and France in particular, want to eat from both sides. They tolerate the terrorist group on their territory and seek better relations with Iran, especially for economic reasons. It's not sure that this can work. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
Okay, turning elsewhere now, search crews have uncovered 8 more bodies at the site of a collapsed building in the U.S. state of Florida. The confirmed death toll from the Surfside incident now stands at 54, with 86 people still unaccounted for. Local officials have told family members that search and rescue operations are now considered a recovery mission, as there's zero chance of finding survivors. Parts of the building collapsed on June 24th. The cause of the incident remains unknown. However, a 2018 engineering report had warned about the building's structural weaknesses. The United Nations Security Council is set to hold an emergency meeting on Haiti following the assassination of the country's president, Jovenel Moïse. The meeting, which was requested by the U.S. and Mexico, will be held behind closed doors on Thursday. This, as U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres has condemned the assassination. Moïse was killed in an overnight attack on his residence by unidentified assailants on Wednesday. A government official said the alleged assassins of Moïse had been taken into custody. Acting Prime Minister Claude Joseph has declared a state of siege after the assassination. He also appealed to the citizens to stay calm. The high-profile killing occurred amid a rising wave of politically linked violence in the Caribbean nation. Elsewhere, legislators claim the EU nations are more interested in deporting refugees than affording them protection they are entitled to under international law. Hundreds of desperate asylum seekers continue to die at sea, attempting to reach the EU. Jerome Hughes reports.
Latest figures from the International Organization for Migration show so far this year, 898 refugees have died in the Mediterranean Sea while trying to reach EU soil. That's three times more compared to the same period last year. The subject has, yet again, just been debated in the European Parliament.
Europe is no longer in a migration crisis.
That remark by EU Home Affairs Commissioner Ylva Johansson has incensed many lawmakers.
It is quite surprising to be here listening to this debate, and suddenly the Commissioner says the EU is no longer in a migration crisis. Commissioner, what planet are you living on?
Legislators and rights groups highlight reports that EU countries such as Greece and Italy are aggressively pushing refugee vessels away from their shores. Other EU nations like Austria and Hungary have closed their borders to these desperate people. A €6.3 billion fund has been agreed by the European Parliament to help member states manage the refugee issue.
We first need to see improvements in respect for fundamental rights and accountability, and this funding should be made conditional upon fundamental rights compliance.
The EU is continuing its policy of sending billions of euro to Turkey and Libya so that authorities there prevent the flow of refugees to the 27-nation bloc.
Throughout this, European leaders keep resorting to populist solutions of making it harder and harder for people to reach safety.
Campaigners say at no point since the crisis started in 2015 has the EU taken responsibility. They say the main source of the problem relates to attempts by Western powers to destroy and take over Syria. Now EU leaders are being urged to show some compassion and solidarity.
Finally, take political responsibility to break the deadlock in the Council and to agree on a common European asylum system.
However, rights groups say that is wishful thinking. Anti-refugee politicians such as Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban have the power to veto any proposals that are presented here. Jerome Hughes at the European Council, Brussels.
That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. the limelight. The Brazilian president has come under further pressure after being personally implicated in an alleged corruption racket involving the supposed misappropriation of his workforce's wages. Jair Bolsonaro, a far-right populist who admires Donald Trump, took office in January of 2019, vowing to forever free the fatherland from the yoke of corruption. Mr. Bolsonaro is suffering a wretched spell even by the turbulent standards of his own two-and-a-half-year presidency. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Tom Phillips. The piece is titled, Corruption Allegations Increase Pressure on Bolsonaro. The Brazilian president has come under further pressure after being personally implicated in an alleged corruption racket involving the supposed misappropriation of his workforce's wages. Jair Bolsonaro, a far-right populist who admires Donald Trump, took office in January of 2019, vowing to forever free the fatherland from the yoke of corruption. Mr. Bolsonaro is suffering a wretched spell even by the turbulent standards of his own two-and-a-half-year presidency. On Monday, 5th of July, however, a leading Brazilian news website published a series of reports that threatened to fatally undermine Bolsonaro's already tenuous claim to be a clean-living conservative. UOL claimed its reports, called The Secret Life of Jair, suggested he had presided over an embezzlement scheme known as the Rachadinha. During his almost 30 years as a lawmaker in the lower house of Congress between 1991 and 2018. One UOL story featured audio recordings obtained from an unnamed source in which Andrea Sequeira Valle, the sister of Bolsonaro's second wife, allegedly discussed how her brother was sacked from his job in Bolsonaro's congressional chambers. Andre caused loads of problems because Andre never gave back the right amount of money that had to be given back, you see. He was supposed to give back 6,000 reals, but Andre would only hand over 2,000 or 3,000 reals. This went for ages until Jair said, enough, get rid of him, because he never gives me back the right amount of money. In Brazil, the illegal and reportedly widespread practice by which politicians demand a slice of their staff's wages is known as the Rachadinha, a slang term which roughly translates as salary split or cashback. Bolsonaro's senator son, Flavio Bolsonaro, has long been dogged by similar allegations that he oversaw such a scam during his time as a state congressman in Rio de Janeiro. Second recording obtained by UOL, the woman identified as Jair Bolsonaro's former sister-in-law says, it's not nothing I know, there's a lot that I could do to screw Jair's life, that's what they're afraid of. The revelations, which Bolsonaro's lawyer rejected as being based on untruthful and non-existent facts, sparked renewed calls for impeachment of a president who is already facing mounting public anger over his anti-scientific response to the COVID-19 pandemic, which has already killed nearly 525,000 Brazilians. Three mass anti-Bolsonaro demonstrations have been held since late May, most recently on Saturday, when thousands of dissidents hit the streets after allegations of dodgy dealings involving the procurement of COVID vaccines. Bolsonaro's tenure in the presidency is becoming increasingly intolerable, tweeted Vem Pra Rua, Hit the Streets, a right-wing group that played a key role in the 2016 impeachment of the then-president, Dilma Rousseff. Leonardo Sakamoto, a UOL columnist, claimed the recordings provided strong evidence that Jair Bolsonaro had presided over a mafia scheme and the presidency had been captured by a crime conglomerate. Bolsonaro's lawyer, Frederick Wassef, told journalists no cashback scheme ever existed in the chambers of Congressman Jair Bolsonaro or any of his sons. Bolsonaro is suffering a wretched spell even by the turbulent standards of his own 2.5-year-old presidency, which critics say has inflicted historic damage on Brazil's environment, public health, and international reputation. In March, Bolsonaro's main political rival, the former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, roared back on the political scene with polls suggesting Lula would trounce Bolsonaro in next year's presidential election. In April, the Senate launched a parliamentary inquiry into Jair Bolsonaro's COVID response, with its televised hearings cementing in the minds of voters the president's responsibility for Brazil's chaotic and some are now saying corrupt handling of the health emergency. In late June, the inquiry heard explosive allegations that Jair Bolsonaro had failed to act after being alerted to suspicions over a 1.6 billion real deal to import India's Covaxin shot. Bolsonaro has denied any wrongdoing and last week tried to distance himself from the claims of health ministry corruption, declaring, "I've no way of knowing what goes on in the ministries." At last Saturday's protests, however, many demonstrators carried placards denouncing what they called the deadly human impact of alleged corruption within Jair Bolsonaro's administration. "Who did you lose because of a dollar?" said one poster, referring to separate allegations that a health ministry official sought $1 kickbacks for the purchase of AstraZeneca vaccines. Another protester's placards read, "Bolsonaro behind bars now." Mauricio Machado, a 43-year-old waiter who joined the rally, said, "He's corrupt. He's a denialist. I'm not a psychiatrist, but perhaps he's a psychopath." Despite growing calls for Jair Bolsonaro's impeachment, to which the right-wing New Party added its voice on Monday, experts say that remains an improbable outcome. Bolsonaro's ratings are plummeting, but he has brokered a sturdy, if capricious, support base in Congress, including the lower house president, Arthur Lira, who would need to approve any impeachment proceedings against the president. "Impeachment doesn't depend on the opposition. Impeachment depends on Arthur Lira," said Maria Cristina Fernandez, a columnist for the Valor Económico newspaper. Fernandez added, "And Arthur Lira has shown no sign of wanting to do anything."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is my absolute honor and pleasure to be with you guys today. And of course, with my wonderful friend and sister, Sister Razia Shamini. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's really an honor for me to be here.
So, Sister Razia, we've been talking about reproductive system health and hygiene for both men and women, the importance of reproductive system health and hygiene for men, the things that they should and could consume in order to boost their libido, their sperm count, the health of their sperm, how great emphasis our ahadith lay upon a man taking good care of himself, of his appearance.
All these are self-care in
exactly.
our hadith,
and it's part of taqwa.
Exactly.
It's part of taqwa, and we need to understand that.
This is taqwa itself.
Exactly.
It's not just praying and fasting and going to this place and that place. Taqwa means that you have a harmonious life with yourself, with your nature, with God, and with the others living around
exactly.
you.
Exactly. With that
taqwa.
Human being who devotes her time, her energy, her youth, her beauty, her love, her heart, her attention to you, it is taqwa for you to be able to take care of that trust Allah has put in your hands, in your home. And the same way she's been given responsibilities to take care of you, to love you, to say yes to you in a lot of matters, it's your job to take care of her well-being as well. And you can't do that if you're weak and stinky and boring and aggressive
exactly.
and depressed.
Exactly. So many marriages, so
are
many
destroyed.
Beautiful institutions are seriously damaged and destroyed just because of the misunderstanding of men and women with regards to what is taqwa, what is religion, what is faith.
Exactly.
And if we believe that Islam is a comprehensive religion, that it has plans and instructions for each and every aspect of our life, this is an important aspect which we have to really pay close attention to, because we're not just talking about reproducing and having more children. Also, before that comes the joy, the pleasure of the intimacy of, you know, having an intimate relationship with your wife. And this is very important in the satisfaction. You know, when your wife is happy, when she's satisfied, when you are satisfied in your intimate relationship, then
the world
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is satisfied,
exactly.
right? That is why they say when you take the ghusl, after having the intimate relationship, for every drop of water that drips on you, you receive mercy, countless
mercy.
Blessings from Allah
exactly.
subhanahu wa ta'ala. Why? Because you have made someone else happy. You have brought peace and serenity.
And it's so good for you yourself, as a man or a woman, for your mental health. It's such a great stress relief. It helps with your longevity, the physical health. You have this resting place, a place to find undivided comfort and attention and love and affection. And if we don't take care of that aspect of our marriage properly, everything else will fall apart.
Exactly.
And then we'd be wondering, like, why am I so miserable? Why are my kids such a mess? Why is my life such a mess?
If you want to have a good parenting in your family, if you want to have good child raising, if you want to be a good father and mother, have a good sexual relationship with
Absolutely.
Your wife. Take care of these instructions to have a good drive, to have a good relationship. Because a lot of counselors say that many marriages end up in a divorce because they do not have a good intimacy.
Exactly. It's the greatest manifestation of that marriage's harmony, love, and in syncness. That safe and affectionate space they have in their privacy.
Exactly.
And if that is not manifesting, if that is not, you know, unfolding properly, if it's not happening properly, it means you have problems in other areas.
Exactly.
That's how you, like, judge the health of your marriage. You are listening to Muslim Lady here on IRIB English Radio. We're going to be back after a short break. Don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
We are talking about the health and hygiene of the male reproductive system with Sister Razia Shamini.
I'm going to mention a very good breakfast for men, which is very empowering and nutritious in terms of increasing their libido and making them to be good potential fathers and to have a healthy child after conception. One of the books that I'm using for these series of discussions is a book written by a lady called Mrs. Khodai. She has written a series of books on ladies' self-care. With regards to pregnancy, she has 3 volumes of books, prior, while pregnancy, and after pregnancy. One of the books that we've been using for the past couple of episodes is that, oh God, I want to have a healthy and virtuous child, right? This is the first volume of the book. This breakfast is introduced by her, and she's mentioning these from various sources, including the Book of Avicenna and instructions he provides for increasing the men's
libido,
right. So this could be used on a daily basis. You take a small onion, you chop it, you fry it in olive oil. Be careful not to overheat the olive oil as it like ruins the smell and the quality and the texture. And then you add either 3, 4, or 5 dates to it.
Interesting.
Right? And then you crack one egg. Local organic egg into it.
Just one?
Yes, one. Because if you want to have it every single day. And so this is a very delicious breakfast. I haven't put like actually onions in it, but yeah, dates and eggs are really nice to have. Yeah. So you can have it for 40 days, up to 3 months, you can use this breakfast. And after that, if you feel that it's making your body temperature, like it's making your nature hot, you can use the chicory or the kusni, as we've mentioned. Some other sources are very good nutrients for the man's reproductive system is the eggs of other birds, such as pigeons, such as quail, and also the local organic chicken that we just mentioned. Okay, something else that we have already mentioned in our previous programs with regards to the detoxification of the body and like giving good nutrient to the body is the chickpea.
Yummy. Oh, you guys, make hummus as much as you can. It's exactly. Got all the ingredients. It's got garlic, it's got sesame, chickpea.
Right.
It's perfect.
Even, you know, if you only boil the chickpeas, cook the chickpeas and just have like add some lemon.
And olive oil.
And olive oil and a little bit of garlic to it. It's going to be fabulous.
Yes, it's very filling. It's very nutritious.
Exactly. Sunflower seed kernels, they are perfect.
Obviously, high in vitamin B.
Exactly.
And omega.
Exactly. Of all the other vegetables, you can choose to have cauliflower, spinach, garden cress, onion, okra, which would help you tremendously in creating and generating a lot of
healthy sperms,
because they are good sources of vitamin B6. They're really good for you, and put them in your priority. Also, have a lot of barley, whether it's in the form of soup, in the form of bread.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have a lot of white rice, which isn't even healthy.
Yeah.
It's cold and it's white and it's low in fiber and it's been processed so much.
Exactly.
If they could replace that with broken barley, right? Or just oats in your soup, like you said, barley bread even, and just maybe use it as your carb, replace your rice with it. It's good for you in every way.
Exactly. 3 more things which are really helpful for a man is to have pepper. Not so much, but to have some pepper in the food, onion, and also natural sweets. They are super good for the sperm production.
Like dates and honey.
Exactly. Raisins, dates, honey. And try to avoid pickles.
Pickles. Because of the vinegar?
Because of the vinegar.
We're going to be back after a short break to listen to some tunes. Make sure to stay with us here on Muslim Lady. Amir al-Mu'mineen and Fatima Zahra, salamullah alayha, I think their relationship was one of the greatest examples. They both lived stressful lives. It was the beginning of Islam. They were poor. All the Muslims were poor. Amir al-Mu'mineen constantly was in wars and battles. And, you know, every time he stepped out of the house, there was the the fear of him being assassinated, being killed. And yet, in this situation where they were financially and socially and in every other aspect troubled, Amir al-Mu'minin says, what about his wife? Every time I saw her face, all the sorrows of the world would be lifted from my heart. Because they had no money, they had no, like, comfort in that sense, but that love that they had for each other, the comfort they created each other, Fatima al-Zahra was his home.
Here again, we go back to the topic of qanitat. Because I just remembered that after the martyrdom of Rasulullah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, when there was this attack to her house, and two of those people, personalities involved in the attack, wanted to come to Lady Fatima for apologies. And they came to Lady Fatima, and obviously she didn't want to see them, so they went to Imam Ali alayhi salam, and they said, you know, we're really sorry, and we want to come talk to your wife and, you know, express our apologies to her. And then Ali alayhi salam comes to her
and asks.
And then, you know what she says? She says, you are the Rabbul Bayt.
Sister Razia, though I respect that opinion, Amir al-Mu'mineen was her imam. Even if he wasn't her Rabbul Bayt.
No, she doesn't say, you are my imam.
Wait.
She
says, no, no, you no, no, are. No. Stop right there. Didn't you say that Rabbul Bayt is the woman?
Maybe she used another terminology, but what she meant is that, you are the Qawwam. So
now, I wouldn't mind.
Although she was super upset with the situation, she didn't say, no, I don't want to see their faces. She said, if you say, okay.
So, like, more power to Fatima al-Zahra. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm just saying
that besides all these nutrients and healthy instructions and ingredients, what makes the peace of mind of a man is to know that his wife accepts him.
Whatever he says,
she wouldn't. No, that's not true.
As long as he's an acceptable man.
Well, it depends on how you interpret an acceptable man. And we're not, infallible creatures on this planet. We are making mistakes, men and women, every single day.
It's not a question
of
infallibility.
And sometimes we give honor and we cherish the personality of a man, and he becomes a better and better person. In this scenario, Ali alayhi salam didn't come in and said, they're coming. Period. Right. Fatima, prepare yourself.
Put on a face.
She said, "Shall they come?" He still talks to her.
Yeah.
And, like, informs
and
her.
And it's a relationship that was built throughout time with this sort of respect.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like overnight Amir al-Mu'min ma'adallah or any other man was abusing his wife all their lives. Now, all of a sudden, we have guests tonight. Would you like them to come over?
Exactly.
It doesn't work that way. It's a process. It's a progress.
Definitely.
It's a journey. And nothing happens overnight. Not your relationship with your wife. Not a happiness or prosperity.
They say that, وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً. Mm-hmm. Right? This is just like a deposit that God puts in your account.
Mm.
Then you can finish it off in the first month or in the first year, or you can help it grow. So it's like a little sprout that you plant in the heart of the earth, right? And then you help it grow. You water it, you give it sunshine, take care of it, you give it love, and then you help it grow.
Definitely.
So if, you know, it's a complete picture that you have to keep in mind.
Thank you so very much, Sister Razia, for this most informative, knowledgeable, and interesting discussion. I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners benefited from our discussion as well. Thank you for being with us on this episode of Muslim Lady. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
The real tragedy of the 2003 U.S. invasion is that virtually none of its lessons have been learned. It's easy to understand why. None of its perpetrators have ever suffered any consequences for the damage they inflicted on the country and the world, says Robert Freeman, writer, in an article titled Crimes of Donald Rumsfeld and a Reflection on Iraq War. Stay tuned for more. Donald Rumsfeld's death is a good occasion to reflect on the Iraq War, of which he was a major architect. The war was the high point of the U.S. pursuit of global hegemony. That means it's been downhill since then. Its failures echo far beyond the calamity of the war itself. The collateral impacts before, during, and after have grievously damaged American interests and substantially diminished its power in the world. It's the exact opposite of what was promised going in. The war was a naked violation of international law, but Iraq could be had because it was broken, so it was taken. The war was invented and pushed by a hawkish cabal of neoconservatives with deep ties to the Israeli regime. They included Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, Richard Pearl, William Kristol, Elliot Abrams, Lewis Scooter Levy, Norman Podoretz, John Bolton, and others. The problem was that Iraq posed no threat to the U.S. It had been under constant bombardment since the first Persian Gulf War in 1991. So a big lie was manufactured and crammed down the throat of the American public to frog march into war. It is sickening to see how many centers of American power were marshaled behind this big lie and how ferociously it was forced on the American public. Saddam Hussein was ritually made into the obligatory Hitler who posed an existential threat to the U.S. Lies were mass-produced and laundered through complicit stenographers like Judith Miller at the New York Times and all the major news networks. They warned that Saddam was close to acquiring a nuclear weapon, had sought yellowcake uranium in Niger, had covertly bought aluminum tubes that could be only used in nuclear centrifuges, and so forth. All lies, and they were known to be lies at the time they were tendered. The people who knew best whether Iraq had weapons of mass destruction were the weapons inspectors who had worked in the country for over a decade. Dick Cheney proclaimed he had absolute certainty Saddam was on the path to acquiring a nuclear weapon. It too was a lie. But like Saddam bin Laden lie, it went unchallenged. Colin Powell, Secretary of State, he humiliated himself, destroying his reputation for life by peddling the lies at the UN, knowing there were lies. Condoleezza Rice summed up the drummed up his theory of lies with her warning, "We don't want the smoking gum to be a mushroom cloud." Rumsfeld prophesied it could last 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months. The U.S. is still there more than 18 years later. The U.S. had to kill more than 300,000 Iraqis, most of them civilians, to suppress the swelling resistance. Its use of depleted uranium in its ammunition left Iraq the most radioactive geography on Earth. Acknowledging the war's failure in its parallel with another U.S. military fiasco, Rumsfeld prohibited the use of the word quagmire in the Pentagon to describe the Maras. Former head of the National Security Agency, General William Odom, called the war the greatest strategic disaster in the history of the U.S. It was a calamity, a debacle, a notorious advertisement of the epic failure of the U.S. military, which delusionally, robotically advertises itself as the finest fighting force in the world. It has not won a major war since the Second World War, not Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, or now Afghanistan. The war produced a substantial spike in global terror, including the creation of Daesh under the watchful, nurturing eyes of the U.S. military occupation. The real tragedy of war is that virtually none of its lessons have been learned. It's easy to understand why. None of its perpetrators have never suffered any consequences for the damage they inflicted on the country and the world. The George W. Bush administration refused to raise taxes to pay for the war. Rather, it lowered them for the rich twice. So the national debt that stood at $6.8 trillion when Bush took office had almost doubled to $11.9 trillion when he left. This was a massive boon to the wealthy as the increased demand for the borrowed money raised interest rates in the economy as a whole. The wealthy are net lenders and benefit from higher interest rates. They received a multi-trillion increment to their wealth as a result of the increased borrowing needed to fund the war. It has been a major factor in the dramatic increase in economic inequality in the country and the world. The oil companies got theirs too. The risk premium to global oil supplies occasioned by a decade-plus war in the middle of the West Asia region raised global prices far above what would have obtained absent the war. The result was trillions of dollars of global wealth transferred from oil consumers to oil producers. This too is a major factor in skyrocketing inequality. All of the above were intended consequences of the war, purposeful benefits to the wealthy private forces that pushed it. The negative consequences of the war, which largely fell on the public, should be noted as well. There is a straight line that runs from the big lie about Iraq to the big lie Donald Trump tells about the 2020 election. Trump's big lie is actually a little white lie compared to the ravages inflicted on the country by the big lie of Iraq. The difference is that the media were prime peddlers and beneficiaries of the earlier big lie, so never mention it. But it was they who normalized big lying. The American public No, they were lied to, and that the lying was carried out by the whole of the elite institution of American governance. The Iraq War made big lying a legitimate tactic to achieve otherwise unacceptable ends, and now there are no effective provisions against it. It's like the broom in the Sorcerer's Apprentice, manically spawning a profusion of new, ever more insidious lying. But the method has jumped the medium, from mainstream media to social media, and cannot be gotten back into the bottle. There is a similarly straight line running from the economics of the Iraq War to the cesspool, that is, Trumpism. In the recovery from the Great Recession of 2008, Barack Obama believed that fiscal constraints prevented him from enacting a stimulus package equal to the needs of the crisis. While the U.S. wastes money on trillion-dollar boondoggles, China is investing prodigious sums in robotics, artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and biotechnology, the technologies of the next industrial revolution. While the U.S. tries to buttress its hold on the last century's energy platform, oil, China leads the world in the next century's platform, renewable energy. Fathers in the U.S. are burying their sons, literally and metaphorically. They are destroying their sons' prospects for a better world, a better life, a more vibrant future, because they cannot, will not free themselves from the grip of internal predators, those who have captured the government to enrich themselves at the expense of all others, including to the extent of destroying the country itself. As the oracle prophesies, the U.S. went to war and a great empire is being destroyed. That is the true legacy of Iraq.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.